Hello, everyone. Welcome back again to another episode of Basement Banter. If only you all knew the technological difficulties that we've been jumping through the past hour and a half, you would appreciate this episode even more. But, you know, obviously, around 9/11, we've been blessed over the past few years to be joined by New York firefighter John Breen, a relative of mine, and he came all the way from New York, so another reason why I'm happy that we finally have had our technical difficulties under resolved here. So, John, thank you so much for coming on today.
Hey, Ryan, thank you very much. It's good to be back. I appreciate it. You know, everything you've done, you really did scramble. You did a great job. This poor guy, if you've seen him, he was sweating it, but we were fine with it. I was going to come back another day, but this is great that I can do it. And then also, we got my cousin Art, Artie Lindquist. He's also going to join in a little bit. Say hi, Art.
Hey, everybody. It's good to be here. And I'm looking forward to this podcast. I always look forward to hearing these stories, John, that you tell, because the original one that we had done 2 years ago was the 20th anniversary. And, you know, so that one was certainly a little bit of emotional, just bringing back the memories and just listening to, you know, John's through the eyes of John and the way that he tells the story. And but what John, what you've been doing you know, over the last couple of years is telling the story of other rescuers that were there. So not only, you know, the other firefighters and, you know, that, you know, played such a big role on that day, but the other you know, police officers, EMTs, so many lives that were lost on that particular day. But I'm going to leave it at that. I'm going to hand this one back to Ryan, and let's get this rolling.
Yeah, like my Uncle Art said, I feel like over the past few years, it's almost evolved to the conversation. The first year was more your story, your personal experience from that day. Last year was more so other people's stories that were also, you know, there that day and had perished that day. But also now today, I don't want to give too much away, but, you know, it's the evolution of this conversation moves forward, kind of like, you know, how everyone's lives have been overlapping, especially in the New York, New Jersey area. The like kind of the aftermath of it, and you know, how you realize that your lives have been intertwined with other people who have also been affected from the September 11th terrorist attack, and the, you know, the falling of the Twin Towers. So John has brought over a bunch of really good stories of other firefighters that he has had personal connections with, you know, before this day. But then also, like I mentioned, the continuing story of these families after the fact. So, John, I'll pass it over to you. Wherever you want to start, we could go from there.
I just wanted, before I start, what I have five guys I like to talk about. But before I do, I just want to mention the guys at my firehouse. It was a rough week last week. We lost two retired members from they had 9/11 cancer. One was John Tisca Jr. and the other one was Al Filosa. Tisca worked in 229 and Filosa worked in 146, and it really was a lot. I'm not going to lie to you. We had in the same week, we had 4 days in a row of wakes and funerals for them. And I have to say, the ceremonial unit does a great job putting it all together. So it was a wake for one guy, and then a funeral for him the next day, then a wake for another guy, and then a funeral for him the following day. And next week is they're going to add 43 names for guys that passed away that had 9/11 cancer. So the wall is already up at 299, and we're going to add 43. We're almost at you know, the amount of guys that passed away on 9/11, the firefighters. So, you know, unfortunately, keep them in your prayers, please. We do have a lot of sick members that are still, that went down there and helped recover bodies and parts, and they give the effort, and they're, you know, it's sad, but, you know, the least we can do is at least honor them you know, when they pass, them and the families, and be there for the families. So we're going to – that's – I just wanted to start off with that. You know, God bless them and God rest their souls.
Yeah, thank you. I mean, we could start wherever. Do you want to start with Michael Time or Michael Weinberg? You know, once again, for someone who was only, you know, less than 10 years old before that day, it doesn't, you know, it's hard to really envision, you know, what happened, but also like the age, because, you know, so many firefighters had lost their lives. But then, like, you look at these memorials, 34 years old is, you know, extremely young. And a lot of the stuff, you know, starting with Michael Weinberg, like I said, so many things that he had interests in that, you know, I am doing today. He was a great baseball player, St. John's. He actually was playing in the Detroit Tigers organization. So, you know, a great athlete. And the crazy thing is, and this is something that I feel like we had touched on in previous episodes, he wasn't even working that day. You know, he was getting ready to go out on the golf course, and he had seen what had been happening and had left to go because his sister had been working on the 72nd floor of the one tower. So if you want to talk about him more, John, I would, you know, everyone I'm sure would really appreciate it.
Yeah, I just, you know, before I start this, it just this time I'm going to do like people that I knew or knew of. And, I hate to bring it to me, but it's just about my, you know, that me being in a podcast about like some stories that I can relate that I knew of these guys. So it's about them, but I hate to say it, you know, it revolves around me. I'm trying not to do it. I'm trying to be in the least amount of way, but this is, I have to say, you know, my story is about them. But what happened was Mike Weinberg, a few days after 9/11, I was living at home and my neighbor, Rose Mulhall, came over and she was talking to my mother. And she asked me, she goes, "Did you know Mike Weinberg?" I go, "Yeah." I said, "That was a name I haven't heard in years." And he was a little league pitcher and he was a great athlete. And that was the last that I heard of. At my first base hit, I was terrible in Little League, but I always remember I had a lot of pride because I got a hit off of Mike Weinberg, probably one of the best pitches. And that was one of only two hits I had that season in Little League. So what happened was, the story was, he went down, he was off, and he was on vacation from work, and he was going out to play golf. He was a great golfer, fishing. He was just a real outdoors guy, he's a great athlete. He was also a very good-looking guy. He was a model, and he was in the calendar, the FDNY calendar. But he was a very humble guy. He was just a good guy, and he donated his time to the Burn Center and also to the soup kitchen by St. Francis Pantry across the street from his firehouse. That was Father Michael Judge's parish. So what happened was he was off that day, and he was at Forest Park getting a sandwich to go out, you know, before he played golf that morning at a tea time. And he saw on the TV that the towers had been struck. Well, he goes home. He gets in his car, roars right to the city, gets his bunker gear. He worked in, 124 and 1, I believe. And he worked in, I think, one truck. And what he did was he grabbed his gear. He went across the street, got Father Michael Judge, and also another captain in the fire department, who was Dan Brethel. And he took the two of them. They flew down there, and they actually got down there in time. What happened was his sister worked up in Merrill Lynch, and she worked on the 72nd floor of the tower that wasn't hit, and she was making her way down, I believe. And what happened was she made it out. He was worried about her, so he went down there to help get her out. And unfortunately, what happened was when the first tower came down, which was the South Tower, he was killed right away. Apparently, they recovered his body and Dan Brethel's body underneath one of the fire rigs there, one of the engines. They dove underneath it. And unfortunately, they passed away. And he went down there to help save his sister. And the irony is that she survived that. Years later, it's just the irony, because the building I eventually moved into, which was in 2010, it's a co-op building in Maspeth, and Ridgewood Gardens is my community. That's the building I live in. I actually live in the same building that he lived in, And I ran into his father a lot, Morty. His father was a retired fireman. He's a good guy. He always asked me, he said, did you know my son? Did you know my son? You know, and I you know, maybe like in the laundry room doing laundry, and I just used to sit and listen to him, and it was a lot of pain, a lot of pride, but a lot of pain that he really, really missed his son. And I heard a lot of good stories about Mike, but one of the things I learned, as good of an athlete as he was, and, you know, he just a good all-around guy in every way, and very humble guy. That's what I heard. So we lost a really good one in him.
Yeah, and then I was going to ask, you know, obviously a lot of these stories are going to involve your own personal connections. I was just curious from your standpoint, how is it connecting with, you know, the families of these people that were also there with you? You know, like, is it, do you think it's harder for you or yourself? I mean, yourself or them, you know, trying to connect over this tragedy, and, you know, it must be very hard to talk about from both sides, you know, you being someone who had survived, and then them, someone who had lost someone. So I'm just curious how that dynamic is, because like you said, the dad had a lot of pride, but there's also a lot of, you know, very solemnness, like in his voice. You know, if you don't mind me asking, just how that dynamic is, like, and that conversation is, you know, when you do come across someone who's like, oh yeah, I had a son or a brother or a husband that had been there that day as well, but they hadn't made it out.
You know, I can really honestly say from the very beginning was really a lot of the first year or two was a lot of survivor guilt. And the first one I could really identify with that was Sue Correa, my friend Ruben. We did that in the last podcast. But Sue Correa, I had a hard time just like looking her in the eye and talking to her, because, you know, I survived and she didn't. And I really did. A lot of times with the families, you know, I you know, it's kind of hard. The first couple of years was to talk to somebody that lost their brother or their sister. But, you know, years later, I know that they really, just the fact that I was alive, I think they were very grateful. The fact that they survived, and it's a silly thought to think that you said, you know, like, well, I survived, and that their son, daughter, father, whatever, didn't. You know, maybe they have some resentment against me, and you can't think like that. That's like a little, it's a very odd thing to think, but that's really what survivor guilt is about. And I can identify with vets that come home like that. And I learned, you know, you go through therapy and you talk to people, and there's just different tools you use to get over that thought process, and you can't. And years later, one of the things I really appreciate was Sue, and I'm good friends with her. I haven't talked to her in a while. I reconnected with her two daughters. But one of the things I learned is that she says, you know, is the fact that she was very proud of me, you know, and what I'm doing with my life. And then even her daughters said the same thing. So, you know, just reconnecting with somebody, I find years later now today, is to go out and talk to that person and what you know about them, you know. Just say, you know, I was light candles, and I do. I light candles for your son or daughter or your relative on 9/11. I do every St. Patrick's Cathedral, you know, just to let you know, you know, my thoughts and prayers. And I know those people too. Some of them are thinking about me that day, because I got a lot of texts as well on that day.
Right, yeah, because, I mean, me personally, obviously I can't possibly relate to the situation, but I was going to say that feel as though the families would have like a more of a positive feeling to see, because, you know, you're not just curled up in your apartment saying, you know, woe is me. You're very outspoken. You speak at schools. You know, you attend all these big events for firefighters from the September 11th attacks, and you know, you're a good spokesperson for their, you know, their relative, friend, from that day. You know, so you being a positive figure, you know, moving forward since then, I feel like that's something that would bring the families and friends a lot of comfort, you know, that people are like going on with their lives and doing things and remembering, you know, their relatives, friends, etc.
Life goes on.
Yes, exactly. Life goes on. Yeah. Exactly. So then the next person that we wanted to move on to was Michael Brennan. Mm-hmm. Michael Brennan was 27 years old and was actually going for his lieutenant's test later that year. And, you know, once again, 27, I'm going to be turning 27 in November. It just is a very weird thing to think about. And like they said in this article that you had shared with me, he was, you know, a really bright firefighter. And he, you know, he was, you know, loved to snowboard and ski. And also also mentioned skilled tiler and plumber. So a very talented guy. And like they said, heart of gold. So, you know, let's hear your interaction with Michael Brennan and how he has, you know, come into your life since then.
You know, I never met him. He was a Woodside guy, and I live in Maspeth. It's very close. Woodside's the next neighborhood over from Maspeth. But I always met people that were, a couple that were related to him. And he ended up actually, I found this after the fact, the firehouse I eventually ended up in as a lieutenant, he rotated through there. We had a rotation program where you start out in a certain house and you work in different areas of the city. And one of the first guys I met was Matty, I'll just say Matty W. I know him from, let's say there's a club called Friends of Bill. I'll just leave it at that. And that was his stepfather. And he always had nice things to say about Mikey Brennan. And then it was a couple of... And then it was another time I was actually doing building inspections, and we were talking in the city, Upper West Side, and there was a building manager there, and he said, "Did you know my cousin Mike Brennan?" You know, and I said, "No." I says, "I heard about him. I knew him." Well, what happened was, I did know him. It through this, we heard his voice. I shouldn't say I didn't know him. I didn't know him personally, but on when we were in the towers, when we were in the Marriott Hotel, when the first South Tower came down. And like I said last year, my podcast, we were on the 23rd floor. We did hear a mayday. And we heard, you know, "I'm the cam man of Ford truck. I'm running out of air. I don't know where I am." And it turned out, we found out later on, that that was Mike Brennan. That was like his last words that he would have spoken. So that was the irony. I did, when I talked to Maddie and then I talked to his cousin, I did know of him. And I did pass that on to them. And like your question before, this is something that you have to tell families too, you know, because this is also part of closure. You know, I think that they should know that. So another story about him, which is pretty cool, was the fact that I ended up working in 229 and Ladder 146, and that's my company now. And he was a rotator there, and he was really well liked. He was a very likable guy. And I'll just say one thing too. Yeah, I don't think anybody ever had flowers at their at one of their services delivered by a pizzeria that he attended, you know. A pizzeria, you know, he loved to eat. They say he had a heart, his heart was as big as his stomach. He loved to eat. And his nickname was Pork Chop too, by the way. So he was really very well loved. So when we slide down the pole, okay, that's called a pole hole. Okay, when you slide down, it's actually like a little room, really. So it's swinging doors, like in a restaurant. You know, you go through it, and then you grab the pole and you slide down. Well, inside the pole hole on the wall, he took a spray paint can, a black spray painting can, and he writes "Engine 54 Ladder 4." He writes it, spray paints it. He does it on both sides, you know. So he did that. And what happened was we lost a firefighter years ago, Danny Pujak, and we had to have the house spruced up. Unfortunately, he was killed in line of duty. But unfortunately, what happened at the time was we had the carpenters come in and the painters, and they had to spruce up the house because we had a ceremony in the house for a plaque dedication for him. And Tommy Gentile, one of the guys in charge of the fire, said, "Listen," told the painter, said, "Please don't paint over the spray paint. This guy that did it was killed 9/11. Well, you know, Tommy doesn't, you can't work every day, you know, even between tours. It must have gotten lost in translation, and the painters came and they painted over it. unfortunately. So, you know, Tommy puts a sticker up there. It says 54-4, you know, like their fire company logo. But last week, in the last 2 weeks, there was one of the guys, and he's going to knock me in the head, mention his name, John Bahanek, Bobo is his nickname. He's leaving this week. He's retiring after 20 years. He created a really cool thing called a shadow box. That's really nice. And it has Brennan's pictures on it, his face on it. And one of them, he's sticking out his, it's a great picture of him where he's sticking out his tongue, and he has like a tongue piercing. There's a little, another story about that. And it has the two pictures of him. And then inside the shadow box, you know, it's framed and everything. And it tells the story that, you know, he was a rotator there and we lost him to 9/11. So it's a little piece of him in the firehouse. I think that's really cool. And by the way, we got back to his firehouse. We actually got back to them. One of our guys, you know, maybe like a few months after that, when, this is before 9/11, but a few months after he went back to his firehouse, my guys got relocated to his firehouse. You know, it means that you're watching the area because they're out of the fire. So 146, my company went there, and then they wrote on the wall, same thing. Well, a lot of 146 was here. They wrote it into the TV room. They did that.
That's really funny. And, you know, I like hearing these stories too because, you know, always very solemn time of the year. And, you know, everything on the, you know, obviously on like TV's very, you know, very focused in on the specific day. And, you know, it's nice to hear, you know, they have big personalities. You know, these people had big personalities, big senses of humor. And, you know, they liked to ski, you know, like a almost professional baseball player. And it's nice to hear like the other side of these things because, yes, it's important to dive into what happened on the day itself and everything. But it's also nice to be like, yes, like they were a very good firefighter, very brave firefighter, but they also had were very goofy, you know, loved to goof around at the firehouse. Yeah, exactly.
Everyday good guy.
And then Uncle Art, I wanted to pass it over to you, not to put you on the spot or anything like that. But do you have any stories yourself of, you know, interactions with people that that you may have, or maybe just the community itself? Because you had been, I don't know if you were living in Brooklyn at the time, but you are someone who had lived in Brooklyn. Maybe just, you know, how the community over the years has evolved from right after, like maybe from like 2001 to now, like the evolution, maybe the spirit of it, and you know, what in your opinion has changed from New York over the past, you know, two decades or so of, you know, since then, anything like that.
Yeah. What, you know, what comes to mind, Ryan, is just, you know, working. So the background of my story basically is I worked in lower Manhattan, a few blocks south of the World Trade Center. I was living in New Jersey at the time. I would commute through the World Trade Center and then walk a few blocks to work right there. At the time, you know, back in, you know, a year prior, 2000, 2001, there wasn't really much nightlife, if you will. I mean, it was really just a Wall Street crowd that, you know, you work down there. And you got out of there. I mean, you know, after you finished up work, you know, maybe you went locally down there, you had a few drinks, but for the most part, you either, you know, you went back home or you usually went back up to Midtown. You went uptown and you hit up really the Rock, and that's where the nightlife was there for the most part. 9/11 happens, and, you know, it's, things, you know, obviously, you know, it just turned into, just a lot of, you know, a lot of military that were down there, obviously. We're talking immediately after 9/11, there were checkpoints, when you were, heading to work, you know, in order to, the closer that you got to ground zero, There were more armed military people and whatnot. So, you know, it was, you know, a depressing place to be, you know. So even more so, you worked and you wanted to get out of there, you know, pretty much as quickly as possible. But, you know, life goes on and, you know, things just started to change over the years. And, hey, I mean, I remember when I was on 9/11 Tuesday, I had an appointment to look in an apartment in Battery City at an apartment, so Battery City is basically around a little bit southwest of the World Trade Center, and I was supposed to look in an apartment on 9/11, and obviously that didn't happen, and it not only did it not happen, but that was the last place really anybody wanted to live at that particular time. But over the years now, though, if you only knew, from an investment real estate investment perspective, you know how well you could have done, because that whole area, has just really blown up in a good way now. I mean, it is just, it's just thriving down there. You know, there's a nightlife scene down there. There's some great restaurants, but there's a lot of people that live down there. And, so it's you look back, you think about, that day. But it's New York City, it is the greatest city in the world. And it just, they just basically just turned around and just said, F you, we're going to keep on moving along now. There's a lot more that's going on now politically and everything else. And just, COVID certainly put a dent in the city and whatnot. But once again, like I said, if you look down in that area that we're talking about in Lower Manhattan right now, it's just a real estate mecca. And I'm just going to leave it with that. I'm going to pass it on. Yeah, so they want me to just touch upon and you're gonna talk about these particular firefighters that played a part in St. Patrick's Cathedral. So St. Patrick's Cathedral, there's a lot of history in my family with St. Patrick's Cathedral. 2 years ago, my mother, we had a celebration at a mass at St. Patrick's Cathedral. It was a beautiful ceremony that they had. The whole family was there. John, you were with us as well, and some friends. And meanwhile, the whole, it was a Sunday mass, so it was just it was packed. And but what it was Cathedral High School, which originally was up in Harlem, New York, had 75 years ago moved to, the way that I understand it, to down into Manhattan. Every graduating class, they had it up in Harlem. My mother was the first graduating class 75 years ago, back in on 2021. It was the 75th anniversary. She was the first class to walk down the aisle at St. Patrick's Cathedral. And, so she was, it worked out that the Monsignor Ritchie at the time had said the mass, and he had some really nice things to say, and he brought my mother and he pointed her out and kind of just honored my mom at St. Patrick's Cathedral. And it was a beautiful thing, and it was during COVID, but it was surprisingly, it was just a packed mass. And unfortunately, my mom, she did pass away last year. She lived a long, a beautiful life. But that is something that, I always look back on and just,
So that's, you know, a part of St. Patrick's Cathedral that I think of. What is that, John?
No, talk about the class. Remember we went to tour afterwards?
Oh yeah, you know, and so another thing, you know, John just brought to, you know, reminded me that, you know, so it only wasn't after the, I mean, the mass was beautiful and everything, but after that, you know, they also had, they gave us a private tour, Monsignor Ritchie did, and they gave us a tour throughout the, you know, just the back areas and some hidden rooms, if you will, of St. Patrick's Cathedral. And, you know, it's just so much history there. And I think that, you know, with that, I think that we can kind of talk a little bit, John, that I'm going to hand it off to you. And you can maybe talk about, you know, some of these guys, some of these little, you know, hidden spots that I think some of your former fire, your brothers were maybe got themselves a little mischief. Well, we'll leave it at that, and we're going to hand it off to you, John. Thank you.
Now, what happened was afterwards, I was with Art and the Monsignor, who he was giving us a tour. It was really cool after the mass, and it was, you know, behind behind the altar and downstairs. You know, there's so much more to that cathedral, and he had like a wall with pictures, and he pointed it out to me. One of the pictures he pointed out was during the renovations. What they did was Pope Francis came to visit, and what happened was they were renovating St. Patrick's Cathedral, and what they discovered when they were doing the renovations, it was a room upstairs, and it was like a stained glass window, but it was very dirty. It had a lot of dust and everything like that, and what happened was Mike Brennan, and I believe it was Lynch. I think it was another Mike Lynch. They were in the firehouse. They were doing building inspections at the time. And what they did was they just put their finger. He wrote Brennan, engine 54. I guess he was in 54, but he transferred across the floor to ladder 4. And he left it. And there was a couple of guys that died. They were firemen. And, you know, they left their mark on the cathedral. And it actually ended up being in the New York Post. Was actually an article, so they, you know, it was pretty cool. So, you know, to me, that's like cherished ground, the fact that they did that, you know. And it's, you know, they left a piece on, you know, one of them. So really, in two of the most famous buildings, you know, two of the most famous buildings in the city, he left that mark. Brennan left his mark in St. Patrick's Cathedral, and Lynch in St. Patrick's Cathedral, and also down at World Trade Center. You know, but I love the fact that he wrote his name. You know, a little bit of mischief in that. Can I tell one more story about Brennan? All right, there's a famous picture. If you go online, if you Google Mike Brennan's name, you see him. He's sticking his tongue out. So the story was his mother. You know, he had a younger sister, and she says, you know, and in her Irish accent, she goes, "Oh, you know, she wants to have her tongue pierced. You know, she wants to have a stud in her earring and in her tongue. You know." So everybody in the room is laughing. They're all laughing. And then she goes, "Ah, sure, why are you all laughing?" And then he stands there, and he's right behind his mother. Like, right behind his mother, he has his tongue stuck out. He has a piercing of himself. And there's a famous picture, if you look at it. And this is what we put in that shadow box. There's Brennan with the 54 engine. At the time, he was in 54 engine. Like I said, he crossed the floor. And he's smiling, and he got that big old the stud in the tongue piercing. So, you know, that was the kind of guy he was. That was pork chop.
And for obviously those of you who cannot see it right now as you're listening, this isn't like a little tiny little tongue piercing. This thing, it looks like he has like a pole in it, in his mouth. It's a big tongue piercing. But yeah, like you said, John, like he now has his mark on two of the landmarks of, you know, one of the most historic cities in the world. And, you know, that's awesome. And all right. So if you want to move on to the next. I feel like we could do another one next year just about Mike Brennan and his tongue piercing and his mark on St. Patrick's Cathedral. Yeah. The next firefighter is Raymond York, and he is Fireman Ray, because he was a firefighter for two decades. then I believe he had an injury that forced him to only be involved in light duty. So then he ended up being an educator and educated a lot of kids, and that's how they knew him as Fireman Ray. And then when the September 11th attacks happened, he hitched a ride first on a news truck. And then when they got caught up in traffic, he hitched a ride on an ambulance. So, you know, obviously 2 decades in the force, he wanted to be in the action. So, you know, he bravely went to the towers. But also in this article that you had shared with me, his 9-year-old son had left a message as well, too. He was a lifesaver. He was a good firefighter. He was a good man. His friends liked him. He used to go everywhere I did. He was good at pool, swimming, and baseball. He was good at everything, and he was the best person in the world. So, you know, John, if you want to talk more about him, about Fireman Ray, then...
Yeah, I met Ray York only once, and what happened was he was on light duty. He was what they call a fire zone. And so summer of 2001, my cousin, I have a cousin, first cousin now from Ireland, Parik, and he came out here. He was doing some work. He was very lucky. He laid out, you know, with a construction company. I think he was helping doing bricklaying. And he worked all summer. He was a hardworking kid. He worked all summer. He made his money. He did really good. And he was heading back to Ireland. So what he decided to do, I took him for a tour. I said, you know what, let's do a few days. We'll do some touring. And we went to like Ellis Island on the ferry. And one of the days we also went to St. Patrick's Cathedral. And we stopped in to see Rockefeller Plaza. So when we were in there, I said, I noticed a place called the Fire Zone. I really never noticed it before. And I was like, oh, let's go check this out. So we went inside, and I was talking to him. And, you know, I'm talking all the fireman lingo. And the guy comes over to me. He's dressed, you know, he was dressed in his Class A. He's like, that's our dress uniform. And that was Ray York. And he comes over, and he goes, you on the job? I go, yeah. And he asked me where I worked. And, you know, we were talking, chatting and stuff. I go, this is my cousin. I'm having him sightseeing. So he showed me, which was really cool. The Fire Zone had 5 rooms in there, and it showed what a burned out room looked like. Like different, like different emergencies, what it looks like. And what the reason they did with that was because the kids, to show the kids what it would really look like if when you play with matches and you play with stove, you know, just for the little kids, don't mess, and this is what you'll have. And he was, you know, he was really very enthused about it. He was really into it. He was a light duty job. He took it really, really serious. And what happened was I found out later on, I thanked him. I said, you know, I really appreciate it. I want to thank you so much. So then, of course, 1 week later was 9/11, and what I heard what happened to him was he was on duty there at the time. You know, being a Tuesday, it was a work day. When the planes hit, I guess he had his bunkie gear with him. He must have had it with him. He rushed down there, and here he was. He wasn't full duty, not from his firehouse. He from that light duty job. He rushed down there, and unfortunately, he was killed. I don't know where he was. I just don't know. I just know that he was one of those guys, and it was many of them that were off duty, and they felt compelled to go help. And that's one thing about this job. We always feel like we have to do something like that. So what happened was they honored him. He was a really good guy. He was big into fire safety. He used to go around the schools and teach fire safety to the schools. So in honor of him, actually PS65. Elementary school. They actually named the school the Raymond York School, and it's located in Queens in Ozone Park. You know, so good man. We lost a really good guy. Father of four kids, I believe. But a good man. Good man. I believe his youngest was 9. That's sad. It's a sad loss. And that's the type of people we lost.
Yeah. And that's amazing that he did the educations. I feel like I also had went to, I don't, probably not the same one, but I also remember going to those like fire education centers when I was really little. I'll have to ask my mom about this after it to fact check me, but I do remember something similar with the education. And it really is, you think of firefighters and you think of, you know, running into a blazing building and all of that. But also the education of it is like fire safety is really critical to prevent a lot of these situations that people get themselves in. And he, you know, after 20 years, after he got that bad injury, he probably could have just said, you know what, I'm going to retire. I don't want to do this anymore. But then he stuck around. He was doing educations and, you know, continuing to, you know, further educate people. I think that's a really commendable thing. And like you had mentioned, losing a good person, a lot of good people. The next person that we're going to talk about, John Florio, that you had a story that we were talking about before we jumped on and before the technological nightmare that we went through. Last night when I was reading through some of these articles, the one thing I don't know how I ended up scrolling past, you know, the article about John Florio talking about he coached or he was the running back for the football team for FDNY. He coached his son's little league and football team. I mean, and then also we're going to have to address that he had a correspondence with James Hetfield from Metallica. The one thing that really struck me was that underneath, you see these messages that people left for them on the memorial wall. And people are talking about doing the stair climbs and everything. And you think, okay, I did a stair climb in Queens. I did a stair climb in New Jersey. But then you see Green Bay, Wisconsin, Panama Beach, Florida, in Indianapolis, and then, Victory, Australia. You have Melbourne firefighters that are doing these stairs. The opposite side of the world, the impact, the gravitas of a New York firefighter and the bravery, like we always talk about, we've probably said this on every podcast, us being New York, New Jersey people, this is something that is in our daily lives. The aftermath of 9/11, people who have lost family members like that. But then, it's almost refreshing that you see them getting their respect that they deserved from even the opposite side of the world. So I know you had a really good story about John Florio, and I'm going to just before we even begin, you're going to have to explain the correspondence with Metallica, too, if you know anything more about that as well.
No, John Florio was a big Metallica fan. In fact, I remember that was one of his eulogies. One of the guys said that he goes, he'd be engine 214. This is in Brooklyn, and he's in the lousy neighborhood, not a good neighborhood. And you hear driving down the block, be a blast, and was Metallica, and then you knew Florio was coming to work. John Florio was a good guy. I grew up with him. He grew up in my neighborhood. He was only two blocks away from me. He lived on 78th Street, and I used to walk to school with him, to and from school. And I always remember that. It was me, John Florio, his best friend Ed Lawrence, and then Brian McDonough. And I always remember that. Since I was a little kid. I mean, I've been going to school with him since I was in kindergarten. But John was a big workout guy, and he was big, but he was so nice. He always had like a smile on his face. His nickname was Doc. He loved to party. he really did love to party, but he was a really good dad. He got married. He was a good husband and a good dad of two kids. And he was a halfback on the FDNY football team. And he was really good. I remember getting on the fire department, and I'd run into him, and I would ask him questions about it. And even after I got on, I would ask him, some advice, just to shoot the breeze and stuff like that. So, let's put it this way. I kind of, looking back, I regret. I wish I hung out with him more. Like, we went to different high schools, and he hung out with a really good crew, a good, fun bunch of guys. They weren't in trouble. They liked to have fun. It was Eddie Lawrence and him and a whole bunch of guys. And so what Ed did afterwards, his friend, best friend Ed, he did like a golf outing. We would always do golf every year. Well, it's hard to do that every year, September, and it dwindles down. And then he started doing that, for the Met games. They were Met fans. So we would go, to see the Mets play. And, it was just cool. And then after that, we just, it was a bar, local bar. But they were a good bunch of guys, and I wish I hung out with them. That's kind of a regret I had kind of growing up, later on in life. But I got two stories about him after the fact. One was I used to work as a golf caddy. you know, and I still did a little bit on the side, like after I got on the fire department. And it was a man that I, very well off, one of the members of this country club, Fresh Meadows Country Club. Well, I was caddying for him, and I said I was on the fire department. He says, "Did you know John Florio?" I go, "Yeah, I knew John very well, you know." And I go, "How do you know John?" He goes, "I knew his father-in-law." And his father-in-law was like a businessman, and this gentleman that was talking to me, I wish I remember his name, was a businessman too. And he used to do like kind of like a charity or a fundraiser thing. And him and John used to do was that they would load up off boxes of bagels. I guess they used to have like set up for the breakfast, and they would unload like boxes of bagels to set up and set up like the breakfast tables. And he remembered that. Well, this guy, you know, he's probably at the time, he's probably in his 60s, maybe 70s, early 70s or so. And he says, "You know what?" He goes, "I ran a marathon. It was either a marathon or like a 5K run or something like that. I believe it was a marathon." He goes, "I ran a marathon." And he goes, "I had Florio's." He goes, "I had his hat on, you know, with his number on it, stuff like that, you know, like his badge number on it." He goes, "And that helped me keep going. It was a marathon. That really inspired me. It kept pumping me up and to keep running and stuff like that," you know, which was a really cool story. So then the other one was, and this is only back, this is recent, back in April. So I'm working, and sometimes you get your firehouses, manpower is a little low, so sometimes you get guys detailed from other firehouses working in your firehouse. So I'm up in the office, and detail firefighter comes up, and it's a kid that walks through the door. Like, boy, this face looks familiar. And I said, "How you doing?" He goes, "Mike Florio." I said, "You got to be kidding me." And it was John's son. It was John's son, and I remember that was a really good afternoon. We had a good time. We were shooting the breeze. We had a lot of fun. We were eating outside on the deck. It was a really nice day. You know, we have a good view, a veranda. Sometimes we eat outside, good view of the city. And then later on, the best part, wasn't big, but we caught a fire. And it was really cool, the fact that I caught a fire with his son. You know, I really look back on it. It was small, but I really appreciate that, you know.
Yeah, that's a good story too. And you know, it's just so funny. You know, you're a firefighter, you're like, "Oh yeah, I was excited to catch a fire." Like, yeah. Yeah. Well, no, just on my standpoint, I would not be happy to catch a fire. But me too. All right, and then you had one more person that you wanted to touch on today, Lieutenant Kenneth Fallon. He had a bunch of kids as well, New York person himself, and you know, he had obviously a long tenure as well as a firefighter in New York City. So do you want to have finish up our tales here with a few good stories with him as well?
Yeah, Kenny Fallon, he was a good guy. He was from my parish. I grew up in my grammar school, and where I went to my parish was Our Lady of Hope, and he was actually the first baby baptized in Our Lady of Hope. It was a new parish at the time in the early 60s and was, you know, built. My dad actually helped do the fundraising and going door to door and knocking on doors, and his father did too. So Kenny was the first baby, you know, to be baptized there, and also I think one of the first students in the school itself. And his father was a firefighter. I believe in Engine 217 in Bushwick. That's where his dad worked, and that's where Kenny worked too. And his brother Lenny also is a chief in Queens. I don't know what battalion, but Lenny, I played I played grammar school baseball with him my second year of Little League. Well, Kenny was a really good guy. He was very quiet, very humble, just an all around good person. And in fact, he coached my brother in basketball. In Our Lady of Hope. Kenny worked in Engine 217, and what happened was he was a lieutenant there, but what he did was he owed a guy a tour, and that's what it's like paying money. So if you work for a guy, you pay him back, so you pay him back a tour. You work for me, I work for you. Well, Kenny owed the guy that he owed a tour back there, worked in Engine 207, which is located on downtown Brooklyn in Tillery Street, right by the base of the Manhattan Bridge. And unfortunately, he was killed, I believe, in the South Tower. That's where Kenny was killed. in responding. And he wasn't supposed to work that day, but he paid a guy back. And that's just the way it was. A lot of guys, there's a lot of situations like that where guys weren't supposed to work, their 24 partners were working. It's just a matter of who was working, you know, the half of the 24. If you owe the guy a tour, just like with Kenny. Well, the story I have about Kenny was when I was a probationary firefighter, like I said earlier, you had the rotation, you had to work in different areas of the city. I started in Manhattan. Then I ended up working for a little over a year in Lot 131, which is in Red Hook. So that one couple of tours I worked in, Kenny was the boss. He was the officer working. And I talked to him, and he says, I knew your brother. You know, we just a Lady Hope connection and everything, the Middle Village connection talking. And what I do was we actually had an emergency response, and it was just an oil burner fire. It wasn't even an oil, but it was an overheated oil burner. It was just smoking. And I had what they call, I had the roof position. I was supposed to go up on a roof. It was a knuckleheaded thing. I didn't go up on a roof. You're supposed to go up and check on it and maybe open up the cock loft leading up to the cock loft, the hatch, you know, leading up to that, the scuttle, excuse me. And what I didn't do that. For some stupid reason, I just went to check it out, which was in the basement. I was one of the guys. It was like a lazy thing to do. Well, I come back to the firehouse, and a lot of bosses would yell at you. Lieutenants or captains would yell at you, put you on the spot. He didn't. He pulled me aside, and he told me, very soft, that's the kind of way he was. He was very soft-spoken. He goes, listen, he goes, when next time you do that, he goes, yeah, you're supposed to go. That's your position. You're supposed to go up to the top. Wasn't stern about it. It was just very matter of fact, and I really, really appreciated it. And I learned a lesson from that, and I learned, like, years later, don't put guys on the spot. Don't embarrass them. You know, these are men, you know, they're not children. We don't work with children. You know, I like to think that we're grown men and women that we work with nowadays. And if you have an issue with somebody, just pull them aside. Don't embarrass them. That's not a good thing. You know, a person that embarrasses another person, that's not a good leader. That's not a good leader. That's a person that's trying to primp themselves up. And that never goes over well. And you end up being not liked and sometimes hated like that. Hated. So I learned that lesson from Kenny. And I always remember that, you know. So he was a good man. He really was a good man.
Thank you, John. And, you know, we just wrapped up all the people that you had listed. You know, do you have any closing thoughts, anything that, you know, that you want to leave us with? Because, you know, if we do this once a year. September, we're recording this on Thursday. September 11th is on Monday. I believe it falls on Monday this year. And, you know, is there anything else any closing things that you have? I know, Uncle Art has some stuff as well. Maybe I'll pass it on to him and then I'll leave you for the final words.
Thanks, Ryan. Yeah, this question actually is from my sister Jeannie, John. Yeah. The question is, today's New York City Fire Department compared to, you know, over 20 years ago, 9/11, pre-9/11, just as far as technology nowadays compared to what it was like back then. Any types of advancements you've had along the way, and what have you learned from that tragic day, and how did you learn to respond to it and to make it a better place and really safer for your fellow firefighters and citizens as well?
I mean, there's a lot. It's really advancement. There's so many different. It wasn't really from 9/11, but we're a very dynamic fire department. We're always making changes. It's an ongoing thing. You know, we have something called the Safety Battalion that looks into fatal fires. There's always a report that comes out on that, and we look at the change. You know, what could we have done to do better? And they're great. There's a lot of chiefs that work in that, and they do a great job looking into that. But I think from 9/11 directly, I think I did touch on it. slash. The only thing I could really think of, the two major things was the command structure in that we report, in the way that we report as far as showing up. As far as we, it's a lot different now. That, you know, as far as staging areas, that's the best way I can say, is like a staging area. We have a, it's a lot more involved with chiefs now, where, you know, as far as like different areas, if it's a high rise building, you'll have like two floors below the fire. There'll be a chief up there. You know, there's a lot more chiefs on the spot, whereas before they used to be only on the outside. So that's a lot different. We got more national with that. We were really behind in that. So it's a little bit more like a military sort of thing as far as staging areas, you know, so they have more command structure in that respect. The other thing was the radios. I could really, really from a 9/11 change, I think the radios were the other thing. They really weren't good that day. So now we have pulse radio. We have where our frequency can go up. The radio's changed a lot better, and we do relay system, post radios. We have like it just kind of like increases that you can hear people better from a distance, especially if underground and overhead. That's really the only thing. Like I said, we're just fire department's really good. We're always changing. We're always doing a lot of research and looking into things. And the only thing I could say, really, like all these years later, I didn't really touch on this when I was talking about Florio and his son. And one of the things I'm really proud of is the fact that a lot of they call the legacy firefighters back in. I wish I had more up-to-date statistics, but the last one I had was the 20-year anniversary of 9/11. That's the best I can go back, about 2 years ago. As of then, there are 65 men and women that joined. They're called legacy legacy firefighters that joined the FDNY, and they lost fathers on 9/11, but that didn't stop them from joining and kind of passing, you know, the torch has been passed on to them. And, you know, if you ever get a chance, look it up, Google that stuff up. There's some really great pictures of these kids, you know, men and women, that got on the fire department, and that, you know, they want to keep doing what their dads, there's so much pride in what they do about what their fathers, that they went in, you know, and they didn't think twice about going in, and they want to pick up that. They want to pick up that torch and keep going for their dads. And I love that. I really do love that. So there's 65 of them as of 2 years ago, and I'm sure there's many, many more. So all I want to thank you very much. 9/11 is just the day I get through it, you know, and I have my routine. You know, I go to my firehouse. I'm with my – I hear the bells. I go to the Fireman Memorial. We ring a bell for every name of every firefighter we lost that day. Then we have lunch. I have a great time. I enjoy that, the camaraderie. Then, I go to St. Patrick's Cathedral and I light a candle for all those that we lost that day. And then there's a vigil in my neighborhood at night, and I do that. It's a long day, but it's a good day. That's how I get through it. So thanks very much, Ryan. Thanks for having me again this year.
Yeah, of course, and thank you for coming on. The past few years, I think it's been, you know, awesome, especially for people in my age group who weren't, you know, old enough to – like, you remember it, but you don't remember it, the details. You don't remember the people, like, don't remember the people in your personal life, what they were doing on that day, you know, because we were younger. So it's good. It's good to, you know, have these stories of the firefighters. It's good to hear these stories, you know, to keep the memory going. So, as always, I really appreciate you coming on. I appreciate Uncle R coming. You know, it's always a nice day when you come up and, you know, I'm happy to put the episode out for everybody listening. And, you know, the rest, you know, take care, everyone, and have a good one.